Hi, I'm Peter Hill, and this is the D Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Now, I first got the idea for the D Word on a rainy Thursday afternoon. My contract with the Alzheimer's Society was up, and I was bored, so I decided it'd be nice to listen to something about dementia to maintain my interest. I put dementia plus radio into Google, and to my surprise, there was nothing here in the UK. The only show I could find was Alzheimer's Speaks in the US. So I listened, and after 5 minutes, I realised that we really needed something like this here. It was warm, friendly, informative, and drew me in to listen, thanks to the host, Laurie LeBay. Since then, Laurie has continued to be an inspiration, and I was delighted when she agreed to be my guest on episode number 200 of The D Word. What can I say? Show 200, and I couldn't think of a better guest to have for show 200. I'll go into that in our conversation and just say welcome, and it is brilliant to have you on the show, Laurie LeBay.
Well, I am thrilled to be here. I love seeing what you've accomplished and what you're doing, and kudos to you for the 200th show and many more to come.
Thanks, Laurie. And well, it was all an internet search in 2019 that kicked it all off, because I was thinking, I want to listen to something about dementia on the radio. And Google led me to you and Alzheimer's Speaks. And I listened to the show and I thought, we need more of these. And that's what we've been trying to do. I mean, you started Alzheimer's Speaks, correct me if I'm wrong, was it 2009?
Yeah.
I mean, 2009, I had in 2019, I think, you know, this, I'm always honest on air anyway, so it's going to be the honesty show. I had no idea where the D Word was going to go. Absolutely no idea. I mean, what were you thinking in 2009?
I just thought there's a need to bring people information using multimedia, and I couldn't believe no one was tapping into the audio mode, which is now turned into video mode. And I mean, there's so many ways to reach people, and everybody learns different. We all know that. And I thought, you know, what's the worst that can happen is it doesn't work, but at least I've tried. And it just kind of blew up, you know, because people can multitask and listen to a show. You know, they can really get a lot of information because they don't know where to look. And, you know, it's delivered right to them. So there's a lot of pluses.
Yeah, and it did seem, you know, it seemed to me, I thought, well, you know, Laurie's doing this, but nobody in the UK has even touched it, which kind of seems strange. I mean, for me, I must admit, again, when I first started, I thought, yeah, well, probably about 4 or 5 months, I'll run out of interesting people to talk to. But, you know, you've had 14 years of interesting people, and I've kind of fast learned that there are still so many people out there to talk to.
Oh, there's a ton. And, you know, I think one of the things that's neat, and one of my goals when I started was to be inclusive of all people, not only all around the world, but at all ages and stages and abilities. I didn't want to just be academic medical model, because that's kind of all there was back in 2009 and before. People weren't hearing from the people who were diagnosed or the people that were actually caring for them. And again, they're the ones in the trenches with the everyday experience. They're the ones seeing how this can be improved and what will work. And it's fascinating to, you know, have everything from a young child who's gotten involved in doing a project for school or for a grandparent or whatever, to having researchers, to having musicians that are writing music and people who are writing plays and movies. And, you know, again, all those various types of businesses that people don't even know exist. They have maybe a handful of them. They know about home health care and they know about housing, but they don't know about all the middle stuff that's out there and how so much of this stuff doesn't have to be in their backyard in order to help them. And again, so many people start their business or their advocacy because they've been touched. So it comes from this, to me, really grounded, heartfelt place that's authentic. And to me, that was missing, you know, before 2009, was that authenticity.
And it seems to me, I mean, I talked to a lot of researchers, and I've got to say, first of all, I was a little bit, you know, these are really highly educated, brilliant people. And I was a little bit, you know, oh my, just a guy behind the microphone. But the more researchers I talk to, a lot of them say to me that it's great to have something like this or something like you've got, because really they do a lot of great work, but it disappears into a journal that's read by all their peers. And one of the big problems is actually getting that message out to the listeners.
Well, and it has to be told in everyday language, you know, because a lot of people, they don't have access to those journals because they're usually paid subscriptions for that. You have to belong to the club type deal. And there's been a few researchers I've had where, you know, I have to have them dumb it down. I'm like, you're talking over my head, and I'm probably a little bit more educated than some of my audience is. But it's like, let's talk in everyday language, and you can use your acronyms, but tell us what they are. Because I think as professionals, and I'm not just picking on researchers, but anybody who's in a certain industry, we get used to our own, you know, our own lingo and what we speak. And we just think everyone knows it, and everyone doesn't. But it's so important for people to have choice and hear what's going on, again, at all levels.
I think also, you know, in terms of the, if I'm calling it products, you know, what we produce, I've always, right at the beginning, I had people saying, well, can you send me an in-depth list of questions that you want to ask me? And I've said, hey, no, the whole idea of this is to really portray, as we are, two friends having a chat. And sometimes that seems to disarm people that I speak to as well, that they expect a very formal approach as opposed to the, you know, the cozy chat.
Yeah. I think, again, having that authentic conversation, it's easier to listen to, and you don't feel you're being pitched. You know, I still, with my show, I ask people for 5 talking points and we go down that, but we go off and we have a conversation, and it's funny because people do get really nervous to be on the show. And I always tell them, it's like talking to a friend. You know, I'm probably going to screw up and make a flub, or, you know, we're going to go off and I'm going to tell a story and then you're going to tell a story and I'll get us back on track. Cause that's what friends do, you know, but it's an honest thing. And all those little stories, all those little things that happen, that's real life. That's how we talk with one another. That's what makes us comfortable. It's not a sales pitch. It's just an opportunity to learn. And so much, I think, from what I've learned, so much of dementia is applicable in so many other areas of one's life. You know, if it's philosophy, if it's products, if it's services. You know, care is care at a basic core. And even just learning how research is done and the process they have to go through is important. And how people can help by getting involved in that is another huge, huge piece if we're going to find a cure.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
This is the D Word podcast, celebrating 200 episodes of the D Word on UK Health Radio with my guest Laurie LeBay. You know, do you think we are opening that door, as it were, because dementia has been surrounded by stigma, and, you know, probably even when I started, you know, mention the word and you see people turn off. Don't want to talk about that, whatever. And as you say, I think, you know, the big thing is to open the door and say, hey, this is like anything else.
Yeah, it really is. I was talking with Dementia Action Alliance yesterday, and we did a show specific for people with dementia, and they were asking about stigmas and advocacy. And I tell them all the time, you know, they are the most powerful voice out of all of us because they break the stigma and people say, I would have never known. You know, this is an invisible disease from the outside. You know, it's not like a broken arm or something like that. It's and so it does disarm people because I think because for so long marketing has been pushed by fear. And I like to believe that we are pushing it forward by hope.
I think that's a brilliant message. And I know probably one of the first things I read on your website was to shift dementia care from crisis to comfort around the world by giving everybody a voice. That sort of sentence really resonated with me. And I thought, you know, that's what we should be doing.
Yeah, it's a lonely disease. And you know, the only way that we're going to be able to give comfort is if we make a comfortable environment for people to talk and tell us what their needs are. Otherwise, we're never going to know. And then we're just like dogs chasing our tails. You know, we're busy, but we're not getting anywhere. We're not getting anything done. So let's work together. Let's collaborate. Let's not always have to feel like we have to do it ourselves or recreate the wheel. You know, lift someone else up who's doing a great job and then work on something else. Because there's a lot of holes in the cheese that need to be filled, you know, as people with living with dementia say.
And, you know, one thing, I know when we first met, one thing we talked about was there are so many resources out there, but it is very, very difficult for someone in the position of a dementia carer with everything they've got going on. And also to just try and piece it all together through Google searches, which, you know, a lot of people would have had to do. And so you came up with Dementia Map.
That's actually been a dream of mine for 40 years. And I partnered with Dave Wiedrich, who has the Memory Cafe directories for, I think it's 6 countries. And he's just a genius in terms of layout and design. And, you know, on my site, since 2009, I have always tried to curate, you know, resources for people. And Dave's put it in a real searchable mode, but I wanted it more than just resources. We have like 150 categories, but we also have a calendar of events. We have a glossary of terms because you don't know what you don't know. And then we have a lot of great articles. And we have, there's no cost for anyone to go and utilize the site. And we do not ask for any personal information. And, you know, I tried really hard to listen to people all around the world, and people are tired of getting scammed and hacked and bothered. They just want to peruse and get educated and do it in their time frame. I heard people say, you know, we're sick of these pop-ups all the time. They're distracting. So we don't have any moving parts on the site either. And then we have, you know, for vendors, anybody can be in there. Of course, we vet them. You know, we want to make sure that they're valuable. But we have 3 different categories. So we have a free one that, you know, can help people that don't have a budget or choose not to spend their budget this way. And I can't tell you how many people say, well, why would you have a free one? And I'm like, just because you have a free, someone who wants a free resource doesn't mean they're not a valuable resource. And I don't want to cut them out of the pie. I think that's one of the problems with our pay-to-play game with Google these days, you know, is only the guys with the money are being seen. We need to bring everyone together. Then we have a level, which is called our pro level, which is $365 or $1 a day. And that gets more promotion as well as our featured, which gets the most promotion. But we wanted for those plans to be able to have advertising on the site. We don't allow any outside advertising with Google ads and stuff that's not consistent, but everybody gets in a rotation. They can put as many events in the calendar as they want with the paid ones. They get to write more articles and then we push them out. We just think it's so important for people to be able to find stuff. And like you had mentioned, you go to Google, the problem is you don't even know what you're Googling for. You don't know what's out there. And so right now, you know, I'll be very honest, our site has primarily small to mid-sized businesses because the big guys don't think they need it. You know, well, they can come to our site, but people don't want to because every big site is different. So even if you're looking for housing, you have to maneuver their site and you have to be able to find it. And they really, and I was one who was way against kind of a one-stop shop, you know, because one-stop shops are usually motivated by money, but that's not what Dave and I are motivated by. We're motivated by ease and consistency. You know, people say, well, I go to a site and I can't find it because they've moved it around. We have set buckets that are never, ever going to move. There's multiple ways people can search. We're open to feedback. And the feedback we're getting is great. And what's very interesting is people go to the site and go, oh my gosh, there's so much great information here. I've never heard of this. And again, most of the people on the site, the vendors, are small to mid businesses that people are thrilled are out there. I'll give one example, Pete. There's a company in New York called Music Men's Minds, and it's music therapists, and they do, I can't remember if it's two or three free online music therapy sessions a week. And people love it. You know, some people just sit and listen to the music. Other people get up and dance. Some people start clapping hands or tapping their toe. One gentleman started playing his trumpet after 20 years of not playing it. I mean, just magic happens with these resources. And, you know, with COVID, our activities section, I think, saved lives because there wasn't respite care. There wasn't adult day. There wasn't family and staff, you know, available to come in. And we're kind of kicking into that fall season again. I don't know about over there, but over here, we're seeing a lot more COVID popping up again. And what is that going to mean? So we have to use creative means and we have to let people do what they're good at and point people in that direction. So long, long answer. Sorry about that.
No, it's a brilliant resource, really is a brilliant resource. And one of the things, you know, this whole thing about collaboration and joining people together that are aiming at the same goal. I saw a post on LinkedIn probably a couple of weeks ago where someone brought up the case here in the UK, certainly, it's the case that maybe they're not doing it intentionally, but some of the charities are still competing against each other. They're all competing for the same pot, but they're actually aiming at the same end. And we don't see that much collaboration at times. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree. I think that's here in the US too. And that's one of the things I love like about Norms McNamara with his Purple Angel. That's why he started that. He's like, hey, all the Alzheimer's associations and societies are getting all the money. And what about us with Lewy body, with vascular, with frontal temporal lobe? We, you know, our symptoms overlap. Our diagnosis changes all the time. So we don't really know what we have because it depends on who we're going to. And working together, it's just a much simpler base. I understand when it comes to research, it has to be separated, but they're still learning, you know, what each disease actually is. And that's, you know, that's changing a lot. I would love to see them all join forces and do a study on psychosocial engagement. I still think, and I'm not a researcher, I'm not a medical person, I'm just a frustrated daughter, you know, that started this. But I think that's why my mom lived 30 years with this disease was because she was engaged. And I'm, you know, we're seeing more of those things with music therapy and interactions and plays and a lot more with art. In fact, I have a thing called Dementia in the Arts where I interview people with dementia and they showcase their art and they talk about it. And what is so blatantly solid in every single one of these interviews is they say the art gives them peace and comfort and purpose. And those things decrease their symptoms and they just feel like they're in the zone. And so sometimes their partners have to go like, hey, it's really time to go to bed, or you got to eat something. But to be able to find ways to give people that calmness, that contentment, that feeling of control, that feeling of purpose, of belonging, of producing something still, that's massively huge. And so as much as I want a cure, I would love to see more focus on care. And I think we're seeing more of it, but, you know, in my estimation, not enough yet.
Yeah, I've still got a way to go, I think. And it was strange actually you saying that, because I messaged Norms this morning because an announcement he put on LinkedIn about, how that is stretching across the globe. And I think that people involved in media, like you, me, friends like Pippa Kelly and other people, I think there's an example there, for not to blow our own trumpet too much, for people to look at, because I know when I talk to someone interesting, the first thing I think is, oh, the man, I just talked to L'Oreal. Well, I just talked to Pippa or whatever, and I know that you do the same for me. And I think that's been one of the real pleasures for me of what's happened since 2019 with the D word. I've worked in radio before; it's been a cutthroat industry, but since 2019, it's been joyous because of that.
Yeah, in fact, I just literally have on a piece of paper in front of me. I just was talking with a gal called Linda Michelle, and I said, I got to connect you with Peter, with the D word. And she's just an amazing gal, took care of her mom. Her husband has dementia, has written one book, has another one coming out. But coming from a standpoint where she was a flight attendant, and she says, I get, customer service. And, she really has a way about her. I hated to hang up with her, and I'm like, but I got to go talk to Peter right now, because I really need to talk with him, because that'll be a fun conversation. But I can't wait to have her on the show and connect her with you, because she's going to be a little powerhouse with the way she is approaching things. And she's really using her life experiences. And I think that's what we're seeing more and more, people who have experienced dementia coming up in unique ways, to help other people. And when you have that passion and that authenticity, I think it's easier to receive that information too.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
This is the D Word Podcast. If you'd like to contact us, do drop us a line to tdwradio@gmail.com. Be great to hear from you. Now back to this week's guest, Laurie LeBay. Now, you yourself, of course, not content with Alzheimer's Speaks, the dementia map, starting the first dementia cafe, have now gone into writing books. Tell me about Betty the Bald Chicken.
Well, Betty the Bald Chicken actually came to me in a dream, and I've used it as a keynote forever. And my audience has said this needs to be a book. And I had a couple of illustrators, and it never seemed to get off the ground. I was, like a chicken with my head cut off. I'm doing this project and that project, and it never took focus. And I worked with Scott Carlson. He's like, oh, I can help you, get that out. So we worked together to create the book, and Emily Lund just did a beautiful, beautiful illustration. She was the last artist that I spoke with, and she really made the book, I think, come to life. And Betty is a story that was perfect to launch this year. I'm really glad I didn't launch it earlier, because Betty's story is way bigger than dementia. Betty's story is about, learning how to care for ourselves and how to care for others. I used to say that Betty was teaches us, you know, to look at how we feel when we don't fit in. But I listened to a snippet of Brené Brown, and she did some research that's made me change that now. And she said, you know, I always thought of people struggling to fit in. That's what everybody says. They want to fit in. They want to fit in. And she says, but what we found in our research was that you don't want to fit in, because fitting in is not being your authentic self. Fitting in is changing yourself to be accepted. She said, what we all really, really want is to belong, which is so true. And so, you know, Betty the Bald Chicken is about a chicken who had a wonderful life. She had great friends and family. She was active in her community. And then she started losing feathers. And there's an incident where a bunch of feathers fall out. She squawks out loud. And all the barnyard animals really notice at that point. And they won't have anything to do with her. They pull away their young. They kind of give her the stink eye of stay away from us. And she's uninvited, you know, to participate in the community. She's ignored. They won't look at her. They won't include her at all. And she just feels so sad and alone. And that, you know, people feel with dementia all the time, people pulling away. And she, you know, goes out into the farm and just walks away from everything. And she's crying and she trips on this rock and she ends up tumbling down this hill. And she's thinking, I'm going to die and no one's even going to know. No one cares. No one loves me. I mean, that's really how she's feeling. And she ends up in this ravine. But what she didn't know was that there was a whole other community in the ravine called the Caring Corral. And they just wrap her in love and healing and welcome her in. They don't ask any questions. They just accept Betty for who she is. In fact, they over time ask her, just why don't you stay here? There's nothing to go back, you know? And she decides, you know, you're right. No one's come looking for me. And then a few years later, she gets really sick. And the Caring Corral gets together and says, one of us has to go back up to the barnyard. We have to let them know Betty's probably going to die. So the horse gallops up to the top and he gathers all the barnyard animals around. And he said, you know, what is your choice here? You know, Betty's probably going to die. And you do have a choice. Are you going to continue to pity and push her away? Or are you going to come back into her life and be gracious and appreciate all that Betty has been and celebrate who she is? And, you know, we've all been Betty, and we know it doesn't feel good to feel ostracized. If we're honest, we've all probably been a barnyard animal that's walked away from someone in need. And, you know, I always tell my audiences, I know you're part of the Caring Corral because, you know, you're in my audience or you've purchased the book. And what it teaches us is it doesn't matter who you've been in the past. What's important, I think, about this book is it makes us conscious that we have a choice in every single moment of how we are going to treat others, and that how we act does affect others. And then in the back of the book, excuse me, in the back of the book, we have questions that can be asked, and typically adults buy the book thinking they're going to teach the kids. But I think the kids teach us beautiful lessons because they look at life very different. And so it talks about, you know, have you ever felt like Betty? How can people help you when you feel like Betty? How do you help yourself? How do you help others when you see that situation? And so it's a very casual, sweet story that makes a comfortable conversation. And we have had comments from one grandparent who said, I read this to my 4 and 7 year old. And the 7 year old, when they asked, have you ever felt like Betty, got teary eyed and said, yeah, when I go out to recess and I can't find my friends. And he had never told his teacher, he had never told his parents. And they were able to troubleshoot with him and say, well, this is what you can do in that situation. Talk with your friends, have a meeting place, you know, whatever it might be. You know, I've had 80 year olds write and say, I'm in tears remembering all the times I felt like I didn't fit in and I didn't belong. And made them also look introspectively of how they've treated others and how they could have been better. And the book isn't to make anybody feel guilty. It's just to get people to have the conversation and with others and with themselves that they have a lot of power in terms of how they're going to be perceived by others, how they're going to be cared for, and their voice matters. But we have to have these conversations so people know what will help and what doesn't.
I think that's a brilliant place with time running out to leave it, Laurie. Apart from just, you know, one more question. You've achieved so much since 2009. You know, what's left on the to-do list?
You know, I don't really have a to-do list. My to-do list is always to listen and look and watch and try to implement what's needed. You know, to hold an open kind of sacred space where people feel comfortable enough to tell me what they truly need and then ask them, how can we meet that need? And maybe it won't be me. Maybe it'll be you. You know, maybe it'll be somebody else. Maybe it'll be a collaboration. I really don't frame things. And I know people say, you know, what's your world going to look like in 5 years? And I just want the world to be a better place, and I want to be part of that.
That's a brilliant message. I just want to thank you so much for being there in 2019 on the end of that Google search, for us becoming friends, which has been really special. And I just want you to do one thing for me, which is put a date in your diary for show number 300.
And I would love that. I would absolutely love that. You have done such incredible work, Pete. It's amazing. People love your show. It is, you know, plugging a hole, like you said, you and Pippa, myself, and there's many other shows out there as well. And we all approach it a little bit different, and that's okay. You know, people need variety, and they, you know, they don't mind if they're hearing me and hearing you and hearing Pippa interview the same person. You know, they're all spread out, but different messages come out in every single show. And I think that's the beauty. And sometimes people need to hear that overlap to kind of push them forward to maybe reach out. Because maybe it wasn't the right time for them, but it's a reminder. And the other thing I think that's important with our shows is some people say, well, I, you know, I don't need that. It's not my life, but it could be, and it most likely will be. And if it's not you or one of your immediate family members or close friends, it's going to be in your circle and you're going to run into it. Might be in the grocery store where somebody's struggling or the gas station or the bank. This information can help you help them. And I think it's important for us to get educated before we need it, if that's possible.
Laurie, thank you so much for being my guest.
Well, thanks for having me. And I will be more than happy to come back for your 300th show.
Thanks so much to Laurie. And if you haven't heard Alzheimer's Speaks yet, then do check it out at alzheimerspeaks.com. Before I go, I just want to share something with you. Back in the 1980s, I worked on a hospital radio station here in the UK. It was a large psychiatric hospital, and I now realise that a large number of the patients were living with dementia. On one weekend, we arranged a party on one of the wards, and just as it started, one of the patients, who hadn't said a word before, got up and started playing the piano, and he went on to give us a rendition of a whole lot of sing-along songs. Everybody had a great time, and when we were clearing up, my friend Michelle talked to Sam, the pianist, who said,
I came here some 14 or 15 years ago, and by and large, this party has been one of the jolliest I've known throughout the time.
That's lovely. Fantastic.
In any case, all I can say is it's time you employed a second pianist.
I've carried that clip around with me for 30 years to demonstrate how just one small act can make such a big difference. Well, that's it for this edition. Hope you've enjoyed it, and you'll join me again soon for another D Word podcast.